All right. That's the way to do a Christmas carol, right? Good evening, Truth Seekers. Malloy here on the Nova M Radio Network. Thanks for tuning in. When's the Christmas show, Kathy? Tuesday? Tuesday's the Christmas show, right? Just a little Trans-Siberian Orchestra music there, Carol of the Bells. I love that. Love that that CD that came out a couple of years ago. A lot of weirdness tonight to report to you. Plus, we have a moment with Bob that I think you're going to find particularly scary. When I read this one today, I started to get a bit, because I haven't told Bob this yet. If he's listening right now, he's going to say, what the hell? When I read what he wrote today, I started to think, Bob needs to be careful. Talk about peering into the abyss and the abyss peering into you. There's something, and see if you can hear it too, when I share this with you, a moment with Bob. We'll try to get to it at the bottom of this hour, because I want you to hear it. Scary stuff. Scary stuff. The mother of the man engaged to Bristol Palin, as you probably know, was arrested at her home in... I got to say that I'm sorry, I just can't help but start to giggle about this story, and there's nothing funny about it. I mean, this is another tragedy. There's nothing funny about running a meth lab in your house. There's nothing funny about your son getting the governor's wife pregnant. And by the way, Bristol Palin's daughter is due to deliver tomorrow. 18 years old. Levi Johnston is the father. Still no wedding plans. Remember back in, when was it, September or sometime, when it was announced that they were pregnant, and the wedding was pending. It's still pending, apparently. So there's nothing really funny about this story, except for the fact that Sarah Palin is such an incredible cartoon character. If there was anything, and I'm only speaking from myself here, if there was anything that I could find about Sarah Palin that translated into humanity or something that I could connect to as one person to another, but in all the time that I saw her, everything from her appearances with McCain to the turkey slaughtering thing to now to this, I can't connect. She's like a cartoon character. Literally, to me, it's like there's no real Sarah Palin there. Every single thing that this woman has displayed in terms of her speeches, her persona, what she's revealed about her life and this and that, her crazy talk, her religious fanaticism, all of it translates for me into just an enormous cartoon character. So when I hear that the mother of her... the grandmother, the other grandmother of her to-be-born baby tomorrow has been busted in Wasilla on 8 counts of what essentially is running a meth lab. Good God! I'm sorry, 6 felony counts. Not 8, 6. The Anchorage Daily News reports that Sherry Johnston faces 6 felony counts of what is called in Alaska misconduct involving a controlled substance, which the Daily News says this charge generally applies to manufacturing or delivering drugs. It ain't going to be reefer. Trust me. Wasilla is the meth capital of Alaska. Law enforcement officials released very little information to the Anchorage Daily News, saying the investigation was continuing. So here you go. Sarah Palin hangs out with the manufacturer of methamphetamine, the worst drug ever invented by crazy people. Sarah Palin hangs out, associates with, has tea with, talks to a known meth lab operator, right? I mean, Barack Obama hung out with, associated with, and had meetings with a known bomber, right? This is insanity. It all of it is insanity. A Huffington Post writer visited Sherry Johnston's house last summer. Her house was described at the time as a, quote, pale gray two-story home situated on a densely wooded country lane. The home, like many in Alaska, is adorned with moose and caribou antlers outside, end quote. Johnston said her son at the time had, and Palin's daughter had planned to wed before they found out about the pregnancy. Oh, yeah, they were going to get married. As for being in the spotlight, back then, back in this past summer, Miss Johnston told the Huffington Post writer, "This is out of my league. I'm just a country gal, and I want to keep it that way." Well, okay. You're not a country gal anymore who's going to keep it that way, right, Sherry? I mean, this is every time. There's what day? Give me a day that has passed in the past 10, 20, 50, 1,000 where there hasn't been madness like this that breaks out all over the place. You know, one day it's Bernard Madoff, who made off with $50 billion. And then it's this Blagojevich phone conversations. And by the way, regarding Blagojevich today, I watched his press conference. I other than the fact that he's another cartoon character, I didn't hear anything that was all that outrageous. What the hell has he been charged with? I mean, what has he done? He's had a conversation, like the arrogant little hubris-saturated ass that he is. Oh, yeah, it's worth an effing $1 million. I'm going to get effing. You know what I think has happened? The reason he went out there today and declared himself going to fight, I'm going to fight, I'm going to fight. Whew. The reason he said that is, I think this is, I can't reveal my sources here, but it's my understanding that Rush Limbaugh promised him $5 million if he would not resign and keep that bright, hot spotlight on Illinois and the governor of Illinois and Rahm Emanuel and by extension Barack Obama. So some of my sources are barroom drunks, but this one particular source has assured me that's because Rush Limbaugh has promised $5 million if Blagojevich would not resign. My sources are not always stable. But that's the word I'm getting. So it is indeed just absolutely the crazy season, isn't it? Kathy and I went over to the nearest mall to the Malloy compound the other day, 6 days before Christmas. Walked in there. We had to buy a bathroom rug, you know, just those little area rugs, you know, $20, little rug. So we go in there and went to Macy's, and it was empty. It was empty. I swear to God. And this is a Macy's that over the years, it's not far from where we live. Over the years, I've gone to it several times around Christmas, and usually you can't get through the place. You know, people with shopping bags and elbows and hat pins, not hat pins, but switchblades or whatever. But this time, no, nothing, nobody. It was like, hello, 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 hello. And you had no problem at all getting someone to help you, because there was nobody there. Oh, we have a lot of things to cover tonight, so do stick around. Make sure your seatbelt's fastened, okay?
Ain't exactly a no-drug guy. Don't dig the way that you get high. Hope your kids don't see you throwing up. Up all night with that cranked out creep. You ain't slept. You and your crystal meth.
Has he mentioned yet tonight how much he hates these people? It's more of Mike Malloy.
And there is a report circulating that the Seattle Mariners, who had the worst record in the American League last year, 61 wins, 101 losses, have just signed Muntasir Al-Zaidi to a three-year, $3 million pitching contract. He's the journalist who threw the shoes at Bush. You know, like I said, my sources are a little weak. Blagojevich and Sarah Palin. I hope Sarah Palin will continue to be, as a lot of people in the nutball section of the Republican Party, which is about 94% of it, I hope she will continue to be their shining light. I hope she runs for something in 2012. I do. Now, I mentioned last night as we were signing off that there were some Rick Warren, Barack Obama inauguration emails that had come in, and I want to share some of these with you because today nothing changed. I mean, this bigoted son of a bitch is going to be up there, right up there with Barack Obama giving the invocation. Somebody said, "Well, Malloy, you know, Reverend Joseph Lowry will be giving what do you call it? The end of the service, the benediction." I have a hard time with those religious terms. He'll be giving the benediction. Well, that's good. I mean, the Reverend Joe Lowry, we've known Reverend Lowry for a number of years from here in Atlanta, from the SCLC. Yeah, that's good. That's fine. But it doesn't make any difference. You know, that doesn't cancel this bigoted snake, Rick Warren, you know, this prosperity freak. You know, believe in the Lord Jesus Christ and you'll get rich, you know. Wash yourself in the blood of the Lamb and then check your wallet and it'll be full of greenbacks. I mean, I can't stand these people. David Korn, late of the Nation and now other things, weighs in on the Rick Warren brouhaha. David made an excellent point, according to John Aravosis, who is writing at America Blog. John writes, "The problem isn't that Obama talks to Rick Warren or even meets with Rick Warren. If Obama wants to meet with Ahmadinejad, more power to him. But you don't see him inviting Ahmadinejad to the inauguration dais. There's a difference between reaching out to bad guys and legitimizing them." And David Korn writes, quote, "By all means, Obama should work with Rick Warren when there is common cause. For political reasons, he should not eschew Warren because of his anti-gay views. Warren can be a powerful ally when it comes time to persuade the public to support climate change legislation. Success in governing often depends on forging coalitions with those with whom you disagree. But Warren's opposition to gay rights is more than a mere policy dispute. It's an act of bigotry. Sure, Warren does not believe he's being discriminatory. But that's what it is. He's denying rights to certain Americans because he disapproves of how they love. By handing Warren this prime spot at the inauguration, Obama is saying that he recognizes Warren as a spiritual leader and is reaffirming Warren's position as such. This is an insult to gay Americans and those who support equal rights in this nation. Simple question. Would Obama allow a minister who opposed granting equal rights to interracial couples to deliver the invocation at his inauguration? Why, of course not. Of course not. From Peter in Oakers, California. "Gee whiz, Mike, Obama will be president for evangelicals, too. Considering what now appears to be a common perception of God as Santa Claus for adults, might I suggest that we simply regard Rick Warren as an intellectually wayward inaugural elf?" I guess that would work, Peter. Justine writes, "Hey, Mike, an additional 2 cents to add to this discussion. The whole church and state argument aside, no one has even made a mention of inviting a female clergy member of any denomination, sect, or religious group to the party." Justine. And Dennis, "Mike, I don't think that Obama can see beyond the game he has enlisted himself to play, even though he means well. He's being naive. Hateful, power-hungry people will not change their stripes since they have no interest in others' welfare unless it satisfies their fragile belief in their Disney godland. Unfortunately, We're finding out that Obama's blinded by the parameters of the political game. He seems to not be able to see objectively as a layman can see. The Democrats are politicians and therefore think as politicians. Democrats prefer to upset other Democrats and refuse to take a chance in upsetting the Republicans. They feel safer this way. Unfortunately, we still need a savior. Either that or a big stick. Regards, Dennis in Seminole, Florida. Oh. All right. We have a break coming up here. So stick around. We have quite a bit of ground to cover tonight, and we do want to do some phone calls in a bit. Not right now. You can wait a little bit. I need to check further about this $5 million offer from Rush Limbaugh to Rod Blagojevich, if Blagojevich will just stay up front. Just stay there. Stay where everyone can see him.
I think it's just proper for Rod Blagojevich to further indicate that he is a member of the Democratic Party and a good friend, a bringing buddy, I understand, of Barack Osama Bin Bama, whatever his name is. We'll be right back on the Malloy program.
One of the cops chops him up the outline where the boy first drops. Beware the Holy Trinity, church and state and law. For every death the virus gets more deadly than before. Homophobia, the worst disease. You can't love who you want to love in times like these. Homophobia, the worst disease. You can't love...
Cowboy, a Christian cowboy. I work for Jesus all my days. And on the prairie, in the city, I'll help him round up all the strays. I don't have much to offer him. I'm very small, you see, but I can love my Jesus.
And now a soothing bedtime lullaby. It's Mike Malone.
You know, I often wonder what happened to the kid who recorded that "I'll Be a Cowboy for Jesus." I don't even know if it was a little boy or a little girl, but. That song's been around for a while, I think. I wonder what happened. All right, once again, ladies and gentlemen, it is time for A Moment with Bob. Brought to you by your friends at Offshore Drilling. Another in a series of insights, essays, and overviews by our good friend Bob Alexander. Tonight's moment is called The Process. Hey, Mike. Here are the steps one has to take in order to mail out a copy of Vince Bugliosi's The Prosecution of George W. Bush for Murder to prosecuting attorneys who have had a soldier from their county killed in the Iraq War. First, buy the National Directory of Prosecuting Attorneys from the National District Attorney Association. That costs $50. They do not have the directory in a digital form or a CD or anything, just a book with 100 pages of prosecuting attorneys. So, the 100 pages have to be scanned and processed by optical character recognition software to get the names, addresses, and so forth into a document or spreadsheet. I spent about 4 hours trying to get the first OCR program to output usable data, but it wasn't working out at all. I switched to another OCR program and, after a slight learning curve, finally got all the names and contact information into a Word document. The next step was to copy and paste the attorneys, broken down by state, into 50 separate files. That entire process took about a day. Step 2. The website, Iraq Coalition Casualty Count, has page after page of every soldier killed in Iraq listed by state and city. The problem is that the counties are not listed. You have to find which county the city is in, and then find that county's prosecuting attorney. Double-click on the name of the city to highlight it. Click over to a state website listing all the cities within a county. Search the listings for the city, and then highlight the matching county prosecutor on the separate district attorney list. Rinse, repeat. Thousands of times. Connect the name of a dead soldier to a prosecutor, and the question comes up immediately. Will the DA in Lafayette, Louisiana, seek justice for this wrongful death caused by Bush, Cheney, and Rice? Or will it be the prosecutor in Adams County, Nebraska? who will come forward to represent the dead? There is a strange dissonance that builds while performing this repetitive task. It can't be done on autopilot because you have to pay attention to what you're doing or you'll make a mistake. And you can't pay attention to what you're doing without realizing what all these names represent. Death. Thousands of times over. The fabric of a family ripped apart. Incredible grief that takes years to lessen its grip over countless lives. Every name a tragedy. Thousands of times over. Even the names of the cities and towns evoke sorrow. Years ago, I hitchhiked all up and down Washington, Oregon, and California. I remember my stops along the way with fondness. But now, death has come to Coos Bay, Beaverton, Corvallis, Eugene, and Grants Pass. Families mourn in Bakersfield, San Francisco, Ukiah, and Scotts Valley. From the Pacific coast, heading east, all across the country, all points north and south, ending at the Atlantic, are the graves of the people who died in George W. Bush's war. Matching the names of the dead to district attorneys is at first an incredibly tedious job. Then it becomes something terrible. Recognizing the dead. Reading their names, where they came from, the date they died. Living with all those names in my head. And hating the people who had killed them, really hating them. This is not a good place to stay. Thankfully, it becomes something else again. We are trying to find someone who will speak for the dead. Seek justice for those killed by prosecuting those who led them to their death. I've come to believe that in doing this, in seeking justice, we will, in some sense, honor the dead and their sacrifice. It seems so pitifully small. The dead, after all, don't hear our cries for justice, but it is all we can do. So we must do it. If we let Bush, Cheney, and Rice walk away, then we will have to forget the dead and why they died. We'll have to forget about what we want for ourselves and for our children. We'll have to forget about the future. We'll have to forget about what we know to be true. We will have to forget about ourselves. We will have to forget that we exist. We will have to forget about everything. We must remember them, their names. It's all we can do. So we must do it. Regards, Bob. Another moment with Bob, brought to you by your friends at Offshore Drilling. Like I said, this one just a little... You know the project Bob's involved in because you have assisted in his involvement, and that is the effort to send a copy of Vince Bugliosi's book, The Prosecution of George W. Bush for Murder, to every single prosecutor in the United States, with the hope that among those 25, 26, 2700 county prosecutors, district attorneys, there will be one who will realize that one of the boys or girls from his home county who was murdered by George Bush and Dick Cheney and the rest of these monsters in Iraq, that district attorney has a prosecutable case. And Vince Bugliosi's book is the blueprint. The goal was to get a book into the hands of the county attorneys. And I'm sure when Bob set off on this mission to, first of all, get a discount on the books, work out a deal with the publisher, and a deal with Vince Bugliosi, the author, and then a deal with all the rest of us, because Bob Alexander didn't have $7,000, $8,000, $9,000, $10,000, whatever it cost to buy the books and get them out. And everybody responded. The money came in. And he's keeping a log of all this. He's notifying everybody who contributed to this thing, whether it was $2 or $100. It doesn't make any difference. 50 cents, it doesn't matter. And the results of this will be known, but the process, and that's the reason I think tonight's moment with Bob was titled Process. I mean, I don't think. I know it is. The process is the monster. It's up to this one guy. You get this? It's up to this. This is why it blew me away when I got this email today. It's up to this one guy and his wife, Arminda, and his 8-year-old son, Nick, and his friend from Women Standing in Seattle, Jude. They're doing this. Connecting names of the dead with county prosecutors. And like he said in his essay, you don't just go on autopilot and do this. It's not like stuffing envelopes for a political candidate. I mean, you've got to look at and study the dead person's name. And that opens up, and when you've done that 4,000 times, you're taking a risk. If Bob Alexander's listening right now, I just make this, I could write this to you, Bob, but in an email, but I would just ask that you make sure there's lots of light getting into you know, the thing that you're doing. It is an incredibly respectful thing, honorable thing, and based on the idea of seeking justice. But oh my God, be careful, because I think it's clearly obvious to people listening. It certainly was clearly obvious to me that you're walking right there around the edge of the mass grave. And when I read this thing today, this email from Bob, I flashed on those pictures, those that we're all familiar with, we should be anyway, of when the death camps at Buchenwald and Auschwitz and other places were entered into by the Allied forces. And what they found was beyond language to describe. And in order to make sure that the people of the nearby villages in Poland and Germany were aware of what had been done there, they brought these people in, the civilians, and forced them to go into the barracks and bring out what bodies were left, or the ovens, and bring out what remains were left, and put them into the huge open pits where bodies already were laying, so that they would see. And I just got that feeling today when I read his email that, you know, be careful, Bob, be careful, because you're walking around the edge of one of those open pits.
Excuse me, ma'am, the species has amused itself to death.
The man conservatives love to hate, it's Mike Malloy.
It's about 10 before the hour. This may be the last one of the emails on Rick Warren and Barack Obama. But this comes from Kay in San Francisco. She writes, hey, Mike, I was cheering during your rant last night regarding Obama's so-called reaching out to the likes of Pastor Rick Warren and his fundamentalist followers. As you said, these are religious bigots. Sadly, I know this from personal experience. I grew up in an extremely conservative church that claims their path as the only valid one. In this belief system, other religions are false, and other Christian denominations fall into the category of close but no cigar. The only people who are assured of salvation are the members of this particular denomination. Oh, there might be others who make it, but that's up to God, they like to say. Better to play it safe and stick with them. As with most religions, the way they get this message across is through fear-based indoctrination. To make a long story short, I spent decades in this church because I was so terrified of the consequences of leaving. In my early 30s, I finally managed to break away. My dad's side of the family remained, and that's how I learned that compromise with religious extremists is impossible. When people believe that their religious path is the correct one to the exclusion of all others, there can be no compromise. I've tried to be tolerant over the years on the subject of this church, but my family has never reciprocated. Their exclusive belief system makes it impossible. I continue to be patient with them, particularly now that my father is terminally ill, but I understand that there will never be any tolerance of my beliefs. And forget about respect. If Barack Obama thinks that fundamentalists like Rick Warren and his followers are going to reciprocate in any way, he's going to be very disappointed. Maybe as disappointed as those of us who voted for him are right now. K in San Francisco. P.S. I'm really thankful that my mother and brother made it out of that church, too. Yeah, what a sad story. You know, like most people, I guess, I've known folks who got their souls caught in those kinds of church. They're like flypaper. They really are. They're like Venus flytraps. It's almost impossible to get out. You die as part of that church for the most part. And they're all so, I don't know, just scary, bitter, and fearful, and not funny, and unjoyful. That's one thing I can never figure out. My grandmother, bless her heart, was a member of the Southern Baptist congregation, a fundamentalist by any definition, although back then I just saw her as grandma. But at least there was an aspect of her belief that, she could laugh about stuff. She could make jokes. She could do fun things with her grandson, me. Well, she had 13 grandchildren, but yeah, I was her favorite. At least I thought she was. That was probably one of her gifts, to make all 13 feel that we were her favorites. But anyway, she was a Southern Baptist, part of a Southern Baptist convention church, even though the church was in Ohio. And a strict believer, strict interpretation of the Bible, and had me memorize lots and lots and lots and lots of Bible verses. He used to tell me all the stories and believed it. She never used the word inerrancy, but I'm sure that she believed that the Bible was God's word completely, every comma, every semicolon, everything. If someone would have said to her that her favorite version, the King James Version, was a translation ordered by King James I, that was handled by people like Christopher Marlowe and William Shakespeare and other writers of that era, I'm sure she would have found that horrifying. But there was some laughter, there was joy, there was the fun. You know, Grandma was a lot of fun, and so many people that I have met who were members of fundamentalist sects within Christianity. And I don't know if this is true with Hinduism or Judaism or Islam. I don't know. But in Christianity, there's no joy. And you think about who is it that they are clustering around? An historical figure who represented love. Isn't love joyful? Isn't forgiveness releasing? Isn't that kind of spiritual purity? Isn't that a thing that will make you smile? Make you giggle and hoot and holler and, you know, run outside and point at the sky and say, look, it's a blue sky. You know, stuff like that. But these people don't. These Rick Warren types, these fundamentalist types. Oh, they might. You know, you always find out, not always, but so frequently find out that these fundamentalist preachers really have feet of clay and ankles and knees and thighs and everything, you know. Because we find out, well, you know, he may not, not Rick Warren, but whoever it is, he may not like gay porn, but he likes hetero porn. He may tell his flock to live a simple life, but he's got 5 houses and drives a Mercedes and 17 Cadillacs and a Bentley. I mean, just, you know what I'm talking about. You know what I'm talking about. So it's just, real disconcerting. As far as the Christmas season, Kathy and I, and this is true even before I met Kathy with my other children, they're growing up, we carve out a certain area in which we kind of blend the whole Celtic idea and the Christian idea. We just put them together. We have a good time, you know, with the lights and the parties and the fireplace and the Christmas this and the wreaths and the mistletoe and the stories, the biblical stories, the stories of the birth of Jesus. We just kind of blend it all together and use it more as symbolic rather than literal, certainly. But we blend it together. And that's what we're going to do in our Christmas program, which we have done on the Malloy program for about the past, I don't know what. It goes all the way back to when we were with WLS in Chicago, right, Kathy? So it's been about 10 years, 11 years. And we read the night before Christmas to Molly. Started with Chris when he was a kid. I guess the actual first time I ever did that was when Chris was about 6 years ago, 6 years old, which had been about 24 years ago. But we do that. We do the reading of the birth of Jesus from the book of Luke and play Christmas music and have a good time. So that's Tuesday night. We'll be back after this break. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio. Welcome back. It's about 7 past the hour. The winter solstice is the 21st this year, I think, late in the evening on the 21st, which is, what's today, Kathy, the 19th? Tomorrow, Saturday, is the 21st. I think it's Sunday, isn't it? What does the calendar say there? Is it Sunday? Yeah. And we have a very nice piece about the reign of the Holly King written by Bridget. We're going to do, I guess we're going to do it on Monday. So that it'll add that little element of the winter solstice celebration to the Christmas celebration. I just think, I think it would be great fun if there was more, if there was less of keeping the winter solstice part of all this in the closet. You know, it should be let out because it's such fun. It really is. Would it be cool? There are just a whole clutch of small towns around where Kathy and I and the kid live. All kinds of small towns. I mean, just a whole bunch. Yeah, they're all exurbs of Atlanta. But they're all small towns, and they've been around for a long time. I don't mean they're constructs, you know, built around some kind of sort of a faux Main Street construction. No, these are real towns that have been here for generations. And I love hanging out in the small towns. I really do. Going to the bookstores and going to the little Main Street festivals and fairs. In the summer, it's just a steady diet. Every weekend, we go to these little art fairs. And wouldn't it be fun if in the small towns around where you live, around where I live, if there would be, you know, public celebrations in the public square that were totally secular, totally non-religious. And therefore, they would have to sort of settle on the Celtic traditions of the sun leaving the earth. Let's call it back. Let's call it back. Let's build bonfires and sing. And all right, not the sun leaving the earth. It's just long, cold, dark nights. Okay, let's dance and have festivals and sing and drink and carouse and have a great time and light up the night. It's just so much fun. Huh? Yay. It would be so much more fun than going to the mall. You ever stop thinking about the word mall? I always feel mauled when I go to the mall. You know, it just kind of mauls your soul, doesn't it? Dick Cheney is certainly the gift that doesn't stop giving, isn't he? He's got a lawsuit in court right now. His lawyers are insisting that Cheney alone has the authority to determine which records, if any, from his 8 years of ruining this country will be handed over to the National Archives when he leaves office in January. Here's another episode from this psychotic son of a bitch. I mean, shooting his lawyer in the face, saying he's not part of the executive branch, having meetings about energy policy where no one gets to come, no records are kept at the meeting, using the RNC email account rather than his own, hiding stuff, authorizing torture, devising torture. This is one son of a bitch, isn't he? I mean, this guy is one real devil. He really is just a total slimy snake, the fuck, blah, 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 blah. Now he is insisting that all the destruction and death and pain and suffering and illegality that he did in 8 years be sealed from the public forever. His claim is in federal court documents asking that the lawsuit over the records be dismissed. Cheney leaves office January 20th, and he wants to take with him the millions of records that might otherwise become public, that would show his criminal behavior, his thuggery, and God knows what else. According to a court filing by Cheney's office about a week ago, quote, the vice president alone may determine what constitutes vice presidential records or personal records, how his records will be created, maintained, managed, and disposed, and are all actions that are committed to his discretion by law, end quote. Now, Cheney's being sued by Citizens for Responsibility and Ethics in Washington. CREW, you're familiar with CREW, C-R-E-W. It's a watchdog group that is trying to ensure that no presidential records are destroyed or handled in a way that makes them unavailable to the public. If not for lawsuits, criminal actions against these sons of bitches, at least so that people can look at what they did. You know, there seems to be an effort right now to get on the bandwagon of, we're not going to prosecute them. History will judge them. You know, to which I just want to grab whoever says that and shake them till their goddamn teeth fall out. Are you kidding? Why didn't we do that with Hitler? Why, with the Hitler's minions? Why did we have the Nuremberg trial? Why do we have any trials for any crimes? We're going to let these people just walk? We did this where it concerned the 250,000 people who were butchered in Central America, called the Iran-Contra affair. We did this. But there's this growing movement among people who say that they're not right-wingers. They are not neo-Nazis. They hate PNAC. They think U.S. policy has been destructive, abusive, violent. Come on, we've got to repair the damage and move on. And, you know, to that I say, God damn it, no. Stop! Bring them to justice! Somebody sent me an email here. I understand some of my colleagues who are among the few remaining liberal or progressive or moderate or centrist, whatever the hell you want to call folks who don't do right-wing talk radio but do work in talk radio, that some of these people are getting on that bandwagon. Let history judge. Man. There is a law, the 1978 Presidential Records Act, that requires all presidential and vice presidential records to be transferred to the National Archives immediately upon the end of the president's last term of office, and further gives the archivist responsibility to preserve and control access to presidential records. And that law ended the tradition of private ownership of presidential records. It passed in 1978. Think back. What was happening in 1978? Oh, that's right. Dick Nixon. And the slaughter that was the Vietnamese War. The Presidential Records Act is what this pissant, lousy, rotten vice president is trying to abrogate now. I mean, everything. Laws on torture. Laws on Fifth Amendment, or the Fifth Amendment, First Amendment, Fourth Amendment, 14th Amendment, every amendment you can think of, Geneva Conventions, Nuremberg Conclusions, everything. Dick Cheney says, no, no.
I'm above all of it. That's not for me. You know, all you people can go pound sand up your asses. I don't care, you know, but, you know, this is, I do whatever I want to do. Man.
A government secrecy expert at the Federation of American Scientists said, quote, decisions that are made in the next couple of weeks may prove irrevocable if records are held from the archivist now. They may never be recovered. And a judge a couple of months ago ordered Cheney to preserve all his records while this lawsuit continues. There's no limit to this guy, is there? I mean, there is no limit. He walks across the Constitution, the laws of the land, just like somebody walking across a garbage dump. He doesn't care. None of it applies to Dick. None of it. It's astonishing. Well, I would say to any of my colleagues who do talk radio from the so-called left, who think that history will judge. You people ought to be ashamed of yourselves, too. Why don't you just sign on with the Republican National Committee and make it even more difficult for justice to be served, huh?
He lies and he lies and he lies. He just lies and he lies and he lies and he lies. He can lie any time. He can lie any place. He crosses his fingers and keeps a straight face. He lies and he lies and he lies. Too many believe him, they're bleating like sheep. Accomplices now in the liar's deceit. He lies.
Here's your nightly ammunition against right-wing rhetoric. Get locked and loaded with Mike Malloy.
Twenty-one past the hour. What else we got here? Oh, this is from someone who signs himself Winston in reference to Winston Smith, I'm sure. Hello, Mike Malloy. How are you enjoying your change thus far? Yeah. Obama picked Tom Vilsack, a Monsanto whore, no offense to sex workers, to lead the U.S. Department of Agriculture. What a kick in the arse to organic growers, eh? Vilsack is a firm believer in genetically engineered plants and seeds. What does this tell you, huh? Nothing's going to change, Mike. You might find some change in your sock drawer, but that's it. You and all the other credulous sheeple in America who voted for this jive ass were duped. Let's hear that chant again. Obama, Obama, embrace the change. And why did the people vote for him? Because he's a smooth talker, a cool operator. Obama is merely a front man for the very same people who intend on bringing this once great country of ours to its knees. There will be no change. A continuation of the same old mendacious ways. You knew it all along. Winston. Really? You're not a very close listener to this program, Winston, or else you cannot deal with subtlety, irony, or whatever. Call it what you want. But apparently you don't quite get it, do you? But that's all right. I mean, you certainly have a right to voice your bitchiness as well as the rest of us. What else happened today? Oh, yeah. George Bush announced his little emergency auto loan program. Did you hear about that? $17 billion to the car makers. And it's designed to pull the industry, it says here, from imminent collapse and save hundreds of thousands of jobs from falling victim to a deep recession. Really? Okay. The offer is for $17.4 billion. No, I don't know where they got the number either. To U.S. car makers, GM and Chrysler are expected to dig their hands into the kitty immediately. But when Bush sat there, I saw some of this today, too, with this smarmy, cocky look on his face, like he had just done this, I believe in free markets. I don't like to do this, but, you know, it's Christmas, and Jesus Christ, I got to do something. I can't drink anymore, so, you know, okay. but he sat there and he said, if we allowed a free market to take its course now, it would almost certainly lead to disorderly bankruptcy and liquidation for the automakers. This restructuring will require meaningful concessions from all involved in the auto industry, management, labor unions, creditors, bondholders, dealers, suppliers. We want to avoid disorderly bankruptcy. What is orderly bankruptcy as opposed to what does that mean? You know, Bush sits there because he took some courses at Harvard, or was it Yale, or where was it? He knows some of the language that somebody with an MBA understands. Remember back 1,000 years ago when Bush and Cheney were running, and all this talk about this would be the first president with an MBA. This would be the first business organization and to run the country. And yes, goddammit, didn't they run it like a business? Didn't they? They ran it just like Lehman Brothers. They ran it like AIG. They ran it like Bernie Madoff. Didn't they do a good job on us, huh? They're going to run it like a business. So now Bush sits there and uses some of the words. Well, you know, we don't want disorderly bankruptcy and liquidation. We need to have we have to have a meaningful concessions and restructuring for the creditors, bondholders, dealers, and suppliers. And oh, my God. Come on, Mike. Take it easy. Take it easy. Take it easy. Take it easy. Cerberus Capital Management. Cerberus. The private equity firm that owns 80% of Chrysler, or bought 80% of Chrysler from Daimler, has retained advisors to study a range of options for them, including selling off its most valuable assets, including its Jeep brand, its minivan line. This is what's going to happen to Chrysler. This is what Cerberus's plan was to begin with. Cerberus being the three-headed dog that guards the entrance to hell. Their whole idea in buying a stake, controlling stake in Chrysler, was to break it up into pieces and sell it. These are this is it again. See, this is more of this predatory capitalism that knows no bounds, none whatsoever. I'm so against this. I really am. These people, when they break things up and sell it, and hundreds, if not thousands, if not tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of families suffer because of their goddamn unbridled naked greed. That's all they're into it. You know, that's it. The huge engine of American productivity. Oh, what the hell does that mean?
Show me the money. Give me Chrysler so I can sell off parts. Screw the babies and the kids and the retirees and the husbands and wives. I don't give a damn.
I get so tired of this.
Let's go.
liberal with a microphone, and that makes him dangerous. It's More Mike Malloy.
It's about 25 before the hour. All right, we're going to take some calls here, so let's do it. The number is 800-989-1480, 800-989-1480. The other thing that I have here is there was a vote yesterday. A declaration was presented yesterday in the United Nations calling for worldwide decriminalization of homosexuality. That's all, just decriminalization of homosexuality. UN declaration. 70 members of the United Nations outlaw homosexuality, and in several of them, homosexual acts can be punished by execution. Execution. Beheading. Hanging. The declaration was signed by all 27 European Union members, as well as Japan, Australia, Mexico, and 36 other countries. There was, as you can expect, broad opposition from Muslim nations and the United States. The executive director of the International Gay and Lesbian Human Rights Commission said, quote, it is an appalling stance to not join the United States. It's an appalling stance to not join with other countries that are standing up and calling for decriminalization of homosexuality. The executive director expressed hope that that might change in this country after Obama takes office in January. I would suggest to her that there's two chances of that happening, slim and none. I think Barack Obama has made it very clear. So many of these people make it very clear. Oh, I believe in equal rights for homosexuals, but I just don't think they should get married. You know, what's next? They'll be marrying dogs. Jesus Christ. Also denouncing the position of the United States was Richard Grenell, who until 2 months ago had been the chief spokesman for the U.S. mission to the U.N. He calls himself a gay Republican. See, there you go again. Richard Grenell says he's a gay Republican. He said, quote, it is ridiculous to suggest that there are legal reasons why we can't support this resolution. Common sense says we should be the leader in making sure other governments are granting more freedom for their people, not less. He went on to say the U.S. lack of support on this issue only dims our once bright beacon of hope and freedom for those who are persecuted and oppressed, end quote. And he calls himself a gay Republican. May I suggest, sir, that you are part of the problem? You really are. More than 50 countries opposed to the declaration, including members of the Organization of the Islamic Conference, issued a joint statement yesterday criticizing this resolution as an unwarranted attempt to give special prominence to gays and lesbians. You see? Special prominence. That's what the psychopaths in this country say. Well, they want special rights. No, they don't. No, they don't. Interracial couples want special rights. They want to be married just like regular couples. That was 40 years ago in this country. That was the same argument. Interracial couples. Well, the next thing you know, they'll be teaching in our schools. Jesus God. How can the people who officially speak for this country make these kinds of statements? I mean, how? How does that work? How do you make this big moral claim, which has been ripped to pieces in the Bush administration? There is no longer any ground upon which anyone in this country can stand anywhere on earth and say we are ethical or moral leaders regarding human rights, regarding human dignity, regarding equality of the sexes, regarding any kind of overarching rights. We can't do it anymore. It's gone. We don't have that anymore. So maybe my argument or my point of view is absolutely in the tank. I was about to say, how can we go before the UN and say, no, we don't believe that homosexuality should be decriminalized? They're not talking about gays getting married. They're talking about removing the goddamn death penalty. That's all.
No, no, we can't do that. Can't do that. No, 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 no. That opened up a whole can of worms. Next thing you know, they might want to, I don't know, they might want to do something.
This is madness. This really is madness. It really is. Don't be surprised if someday you turn on the Malloy program and I'm just goddamn not here. I will have sent my letter of resignation to Nova M and all the affiliates and said, I'm out of here. I cannot do this anymore. I am not going to be someone who's sitting in a goddamn insane asylum and 3 hours a night, I open the door, open a window and say, hello, everybody, we're all crazy in here. Man. The declaration was opposed by the Vatican.
Oh, no. You grant decriminalization to homosexuals, and the next thing you know, well, pedophilia will be all over the place.
Well, your organization, Father, is kind of the leading pedophile organization in the history of the human race, isn't it? So is it not rather ironic for the Catholic Church to make that kind of a statement? That there's some linkage there between homosexuality and pedophilia? What's next? They'll want to marry snakes, won't they? Or have sex with gorillas? It's just absolutely crazy. It's just crazy. A resolution to decriminalize homosexuality. That's all. Just make it not against the law. In the 70, there's 192 member countries. 70 of them outlaw homosexuality to the point where in several homosexual acts are punished by having your goddamn head cut off. The head on the top of your neck. Death, execution, hanging, stoning, stomping, brutality, butchery. And the United States won't sign on to that? Of course, we never signed on to the, there was some resolution that suggested that children shouldn't be in, strong-armed into militaries. I don't think we signed on to the to that. I don't think we signed on to Violence Against Children Act, Violence Against Women Act. This country is in a goddamn sewer. Do you understand that? Ha ha! It's just we're just in a sewer. What happened? Oh, I'm getting caught up in the Christmas spirit a little bit too much. Yeah, that's what it is. That's the ticket. The Christmas spirit is all about love and peace and joy to the world and oh, come all ye faithful and yada 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 yada. And but when you peel that back a little bit and see all this stuff, you see that the United States, which calls itself repeatedly a Christian nation, which means a Christ nation, which means the teachings of Christ, which means, you know, all that stuff I just said. And you peel back that onion a little bit and you find, oh, what's this? We want to support nations that execute people because they happen to be gay? We want to say that's okay?
Joy to the world!
Huh? Is that what we're supposed to do?
Ding, ding, a ding, 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 a ding, 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 a ding, ding.
Oh my God!
Oh, it's okay. I mean, what the hell? We think it's okay to torture people now. So if you want to kill your queers, that's all right. Go ahead, kill your queers. We're too busy over here making sure that there's no insurrections in the street of downtown St. Louis. You never know, you know.
It was that email from Bob. That's what set me off tonight. Man, how can you do that? How can you be a nation that has all these really groovy documents about the dignity of man and woman and equality under the law and even have it spelled out? in our amendments to the Constitution. And then say, well, I mean now, today, yesterday, to say, no, it's okay to kill queers.
Yeah, over there, you know, we don't care.
And so many of those nations, of course, are oil-producing nations, right? Well, there you go. I mean, there was a time in this country where black folks, slaves, were considered three-fifths of a human, and Native Americans were considered didn't count. And women? What women? Come here! You know, that until 1920, that was true. So, I don't know why I'm shocked, but that was then. This is now. This is 2008. This is almost 2009. This is a time of change and glory and marching to Pretoria and whatever else you can say. And I don't know. We'll be right back with your phone calls. I'm Mike Malloy.
In the office, there's a guy named Melvin. He pretends that I am Murphy Brown. He'll say, are you ready? We'll say, whoa, man. Let's wait until the wife is out of town. Later on, if you wanna, we can dress like Madonna. Put on some high shade and join the parade. Walking around in women's underwear.
You're listening to Resistance Radio with Mike Malloy.
Ten before the hour. Just a program note, we have Monday and Tuesday show. Tuesday is the Malloy program, Christmas program. And then we are off from starting Wednesday through, we'll be back January 5th. Is that right, Kathy? January 5th. So there's going to be a lot of days without the Malloy program here. That'll be good for all of us, for you. And certainly for me. To your phone calls, William is calling from Madison, Wisconsin, listening on the mic. Hey, William.
Hey, how you doing, Mike?
I'm all right. How are you?
Doing all right. I wanted to call today about just the recent activities that we have going on here in Congress.
Uh-huh.
There's shenanigans afoot, so to speak.
Yeah.
It's interesting to see, like, the two-party system unraveling. Revealing itself as the one-party system that it really is, you know. You have sort of these people and groups who many people in the common sector of society think that they're at each other, and they're really not. They sit down in comfort, talk to each other. They're rather civil. In fact, they're friends. Okay, you have sort of a common agenda, all right? Like, you've been talking about Reagan and this and that, and the free market destroying things, but it's not the case. Reagan was brilliant, and that, well, not him, but the idea of Reagan was brilliant, and that it took the idea of free markets and the idea of, you know, of the whole, like, capitalist system and turned it on the American people by making it fail. Because it was inherently not capitalistic. In fact, we haven't been capitalist in this country for about 100 years. We've been socialist. All right, if half of every transaction is money, well, we haven't had free market money. We've had socialist money for almost 100 years. So inherently, 50% of our system has been socialist.
Okay. So William, let me ask you something. William!
A lot of those failures. Go for it.
William, let me ask you real quick. What's your point?
My point is a lot of the failures that we've been pointing to, we've been missing the point. The point is we're moving in the wrong direction, Mike. And I've heard you talking about, you know, we need, you know, socialist system, whatever that, and that we, but what we need to do is we need to have sovereignty of the individuals in the community, in this nation. We need to have our freedom back, Mike.
Well, what do you mean? I mean, when you say we need to have our freedom back, what do you mean?
What I mean is we need to have community sovereignty. We need to realize that there isn't just one way to do it, Mike. I think there's many ways to mix governance and common goods versus private enterprise systems. Right now we're trying to run it at such a level that it's not manageable. We need to return that power of governance to the individuals and their community. Do you understand? We need to return, especially economically. The money right now doesn't come from the market. We need to have the value of money regulated by the market.
Okay, William, I hear what you're saying, and I know that it makes sense to you. Okay, so no offense with what I'm going to say. But what you're talking about is something that cannot be done in a country of 300 million people. That's gone, pal. Free enterprise can exist, coexist with a social democracy, democratic socialism. And then free enterprise can exist on the local level that you're talking about. But, I don't think we're talking about the wrong things. I think everybody understands that both parties, there's not a dime's worth of difference between the Republicans and the Democrats. What we look for is a difference among the individuals who represent the parties. I don't think that Barack Obama is the same kind of person as Tom DeLay. God damn it, I don't. I don't think that Duke Cunningham represents America, somebody in the Congress, the same way that John Lewis does. You see what I'm saying? So, okay, everybody knows both the parties are corrupt and they're different sides of the same coin. But the individuals that we vote for, we don't vote for parties in this country. We vote for individuals. At least that's what we're supposed to be doing. We don't go to the polls and vote for Democratic candidate number 6 to be the county commissioner. We vote for John Jones to be the commissioner. We're voting for people, not a party. It just so happens that the party system is corrupt. Nobody disagrees with you on that, William. Nobody. And as far as individual freedom is concerned, that's not. That's the last thing that we need in the sense that you mean it. If we don't work together as a cohesive unit to work on the problems that we're facing here, a universal health care, the single payer health care, the switch to democratic socialism, all this stuff doesn't require people running off like a bunch of goddamn ants doing, well, I'm going to go do this, no, I'm going to do that, no, I'm going to do this, no, come over here, no, come over there. It requires a cohesiveness, a unitary kind of thought. Look, we've got some big problems. Let's solve them. That's not giving up your freedom. If you work together, if you work as a unit, that's not giving up your freedom at all, at least not to me. That's making sure that there's something left within which you can be free. So, yeah, I've heard the argument before, William. I've been listening to that argument for, I don't know, reasonably speaking, probably 40 years. We'll be back after the break. Stay with us. Your phone calls, what do we have? Do we have a couple open lines? I think we do. We have two open lines, so... get in the queue, 800-989-1480, and we will certainly get you on the air. All right? I'm Mike Molloy. This is Nova M.
story in your eyes. It's been shining down upon me now.
Welcome back. 7 past the hour, the Malloy program here on the Nova M Radio Network. Let's go right back to your phone calls, if that's okay with everybody. Okay, let's start with Danielle, calling in from South Bend, Indiana, listening on the internet. Hey, Danielle.
Hi, Mike. I'd like to wish everyone out there a very messy crank mass.
Okay.
I called.
Hey, wait a minute. Is it snowing, like, horribly in South Bend?
Not right now. It snowed last night. Well, yeah. It didn't really snow. It kind of slush fell from the sky.
Oh, yeah?
It's
a mess, huh?
Well, it's nasty.
Yeah, I'll bet.
But it's the end of the bush year, so what are you expecting?
That's true. That's true.
The only thing we can't blame him for is the immediate weather. Although, long term, I think we got a problem.
Oh, yeah. It just, you know, the bush is going to be the gift that keeps on giving for generations. But anyway.
I wish I'd have kept the receipt because I certainly would like to return that.
To return the merchandise. I hear you.
I called to talk about the gay marriage issue.
Uh-huh.
I'm a straight woman, but I don't really think that matters. I'm an American, and I believe in freedom for everyone and equality mm-hmm. for everyone. I also believe that what one or more live, consenting human beings of legal age do outside of the public eye is absolutely none of the government's business.
Mm-hmm.
And
But wait, let me just ask you about that, because a marriage contract is not outside of the public eye. As a matter of fact, it's a matter of public record. So
well, that's true, but I mean. The right wing, the uber religious freaks, and I say that with disdain because I consider myself an actual Christian.
Uh-huh.
I believe in what Christ taught, not the crap that they shove down your throat at,
right.
you know, Liberty University or wherever.
Right, right.
I believe in peace and tolerance, and Christ never said a thing about homosexuality.
Right.
Ever. What I have a problem with is that they're taking rights away from people.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't matter, you know, if it's about the color of their skin or what they do in private.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're taking freedoms away. And I think I have maybe a solution.
Okay.
I think all we need is for one church, one clergyman in a church or a woman, whatever,
mm-hmm.
to hook up with someone like the ACLU, and sue the government for violating their First Amendment rights, which says Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion mm-hmm. or prohibiting the free exercise thereof.
Right.
The United States government or a state government, depending on where you're at, is prohibiting clergymen from exercising, you know, their right to deliver a sacrament to people. Because that's mm-hmm. what marriage is supposed to be. In the religious world, is a sacrament.
Mm-hmm.
So they're violating the First Amendment right there. And, you know, I think maybe that might make it through.
Well, that... Yeah, go ahead. I'm sorry.
I could be wrong. You know, it wouldn't be the first time. But I think that would be the way to go.
Mm-hmm. I understand what you're saying. And I know it's coming from a place inside of you where, like you said, you believe in equality and equal justice under the law and freedom and so on and so forth. The only difference that you and I might have, and it's probably just a difference in semantics, is that marriage, in my opinion, doesn't fall under that category of what people do in the privacy of their own homes as their business and nobody else's. Because marriage is a very public declaration of commitment and accepting a contract that is sanctioned by the state. Again, I've said this a million times. Every religious figure who performs a marriage at some point towards the end of the ceremony
before he makes the declaration, says, and now by the power vested in me by the state of Indiana or by the state of Idaho, whatever, I pronounce you man and wife. A rabbi has to say that. A priest has to say it. A minister has to say it, because the power derives from the state. It doesn't derive from religious observance.
Oh, now, I agree with you completely.
Religions
on that.
Have talked about the sanctity of marriage. I'm not sure what that means, especially here in the South, the most religious and self-consciously religious part of the country also has the highest divorce rate, the highest spousal abuse rate, the highest child abuse rate, the highest murder rate. You see what I'm saying?
Right.
So I don't know what these preachers are talking about when they talk about the sanctity of marriage. I also don't know what they're talking about when they say that the institution of marriage would somehow be threatened if people of the same sex were allowed to get married. To me, it's all nonsense. Marriage is a contract. If two people want to enter into a contract, then, you know, to have some overriding religious prohibition to get, I mean, why not have a religion say people can't enter into a contract to buy a house?
Here's the thing.
I mean, we would all look at that and say, what the hell are you talking about? You can't buy into a contract to, or enter into a contract to buy a house. Supposing my real estate agent is gay and I'm not gay. Are we prohibited from entering into a contract?
No, Malloy, you're getting crazy now. Well, supposing my real estate agent is gay and I'm gay and we want to get married.
That's a contract, too. It's madness, all of it. Is madness, Danielle, and it's based in the insanity of religious nutcases, whether they're Muslim or Christian. I don't know how the Jews feel about this, but the Muslims and the Christians I know just get slobbery about this issue. I don't know what it's about. I know that at one time, the Israelites, I mean, that's where all these prohibitions come from. It comes from the book of Leviticus. That's not a Christian document. That's a Hebraic document. And all of that stuff in the Old Testament about don't spill your seed on the ground. A man shall not lie with a man the way he lies with a woman. What the hell is that about? But that offended God? Oh. I get so tired of this. I really do. But anyway, Danielle, no, we're in agreement. And I know that that what you're saying comes from that same place inside you, that place inside you that is similar to the place inside me that says this is insanity. But homosexuality, how to say this, Danielle? Heterosexuality is not a closeted issue, and it shouldn't be. Why should it be? Heterosexuals. Homosexuals. You know, we don't allow heterosexuals to screw on the street because we consider that to be indecent or obscene or something.
Or the children might see.
So we also don't allow homosexuals to have sex on the street. But where it concerns, Jesus, where it concerns marriage, that's not something to be, you know, kept under wraps. Two people want to get married. I mean, look at the New York Times. It's one of a handful of newspapers around the country that publishes the names, if they're submitted, of gay couples who get married. You know, if you read the style, is it style section, Kathy? Style section, of the New York Times every Sunday, which is my favorite section of the paper. I like to read what the partygoers in New York are doing. Oh, God, I love it. And also that true romance section, that modern romance section. I love that. Love those stories in there. Oh. But if you go a little bit further in the Sunday Style section, you see all the marriages that you know they publish for that particular day. And I love to read about the marriages. I love to read about the men and the women that are getting married, or the men and the men that are getting married, or the women and women are getting married. You know, and you read these little thumbnail sketches, and you think, God, I wonder what to, you know. It's just a little freaky thing that I do. I love stuff like that. Very seldom do we get any human interest in anything anymore. It's all political, or it's all people screaming at each other. So you get these little thumbnail sketches of Jane and John, or Ralph and Harry, or Marge and Susan. You know, these little thumbnails. Wait a minute. I'm way off in left field here. We'll be right back.
There's a camera across the street. Supposed to be protecting me.
store in every little file. Make a promise and take a while. Hooked up to a satellite.
Doing talk radio right. From the left, it's more of Mike Malloy.
Twenty-one past the hour. Back to the phone calls. Brian is calling from Detroit, listening on Sirius. Hey, Brian, you guys got hit with that snowstorm, didn't you?
Well, yeah, that's right here. I'm a truck driver. I'm not going to be home till Tuesday, but yeah, they got about 8 inches today.
Oh my God. I've got friends up there and they just said, ah! hey, Brian.
How you doing, Mike, man? I love your show. I love your passion and, your show prep is second to none, I got to tell you.
Well, thanks. That's very kind.
All right. I just came across something a couple weeks ago on the internet I thought was kind of interesting. It's basically titled, How Many Zeros Are in a Billion? Considering how many billions of dollars the government's throwing away now.
Uh-huh.
They're talking in the trillions, which is just, it's almost unfathomable on how to put it in context. Basically, a billion seconds ago was 1959. I know you were just a tot of those days, huh? And, it goes on, just goes into a couple more. A billion minutes ago, Jesus was alive.
Right.
If you can believe that.
Right.
And a billion hours ago, our ancestors were still living in the Stone Age.
Right.
It's incredible.
I know. I've seen that before, and it is fascinating because these numbers really don't mean anything to us. I remember in high school math, this is why my math teacher said, I forget what class it was, but this is why we have logarithms. You get to a certain level where the numbers are meaningless, or this
right.
is why you have a number squared or to the 20th power or to the 80th power. They become meaningless. In terms of our ability to comprehend what the hell is being said there. So, yeah, it never fails to amaze me when you think a billion minutes ago Jesus was walking around. It's
right.
it's bizarre.
What I find more interesting is a billion dollars ago was only 8 hours and 20 minutes ago.
Yeah, right.
The government spending it.
Right.
You know what I mean?
8 hours.
A billion dollars every 8 hours, basically.
Yeah, yeah. Incredible stuff.
It's incredible. And on a lighter note, I'm a big driving and crying fan. Well, how do you? What's this thing with Kevin Kinney you got going on every Friday?
Kevin is an old friend of mine from here in Atlanta. I met him when he still lived in Athens years ago, and I'm a big driving and crying fan too,
and just
a Kevin Kinney fan. And a mutual friend introduced us, and Kevin said, man, I've been listening to your show for years. I said, man, I've been listening to your music for years. So we just got to be friends. And, he was around when Molly was born, and he knows Kathy and so on and so on and so on. And, matter of fact, I think the first concert that Molly ever went to, right, Kathy, if she was about 3 months old, was a driving and crying concert outside, here in, Metro Atlanta somewhere. But, every Friday night when we play to close the show, to close the week, we play his song, I'm Going Straight to Hell, which for a time in the 80s was kind of like an anthem here here in the South. I mean, everybody, I'm going straight to hell, just like my mama said. I just play it because I like it. And Kevin and I used to meet up in the damnedest places here in Atlanta or in Chicago, Milwaukee, New York. We would just, I would have to be there, and I'd be looking through the entertainment section of the paper and say, oh, my God, look, Kevin Kinney driving a car. So we'd show up and just blow his mind. So
cool.
I just got to that point. Good night. Have a great weekend, Kevin Kinney, wherever you are.
Right. I'm going to check him out, see if he's still putting out any music, man. Music's about
He's got a website, kevinkinney.com, only it's K-E-V-N.
Right.
You know that. kevinkinney.com. And it has their tour schedule and releases and, you know, what they're doing. So you can check it out there.
Music is about the only thing that gets me through all this hell we're going through right now.
Well,
I've got to have some kind of release.
Yeah, I heard you saying. Brian, thanks for checking in, man.
Hey, thank you, Mike. Put on a great show still.
Thank you, sir. Drive safely. Drive safely, Brian. Yeah, Kevin Kinney. That's a good band. They that was it was you know, I thought it was a race. Is it going to be REM or Driving and Crying? Whoops. But they churned out a lot of good music. Mike is calling from Lorain, Ohio, Miles Stomping Grounds. Listen on Sirius. Hey, Mike.
Hi, Mike. How you doing, sir?
I'm all right.
All righty. Why can't another nation or another individual or the United Nations bring Bush and Cheney and all those Nazi SOBs up on charges, take them to The Hague?
Well, technically they can. I read an article in The Nation about this a couple, 3, 4, or 5 weeks ago, or not The Nation, I'm sorry, in Harper's, a couple of issues back. They come out monthly. I think it was maybe the August or September issue of Harper's about how that could happen, how Cheney and Bush and the rest of these people could be brought up on charges and taken to the international war crimes trials in The Hague. And how it would not happen here. It could happen here, but it probably wouldn't. But there are countries who have agreements who could do it. Now, whether or not they would do it, that's the issue. Because, you know, if you're going to strike at the king, make sure you kill him. If you don't, all hell is going to break loose on you. And I think, hold on a second, Mike, I'm going to put you on hold and come back. I got to do a break here. We'll come back and finish this up in a second.
Is it right to wish the rich man poor? To hope all that's well is well and spare. Wish that a person left to despair. Being so mad, did I start crying? Now pay off for all my trying. To do it right, never fail. Wishing for some fairy tale. Nobody said this would be fair. They phoned you before you went out there. With the people of these united rights, in order to form a more perfect union, find that we find the common ground of absolutely nothing in common at all. Get used to it.
About 25 before the hour, looks like we lost Mike. As far as prosecutions against members of the Bush crime family by foreign countries, those are very distinct possibilities. If any of their, the law is in place that could allow that to happen. The arrest warrants sworn out by the Spanish government against Augusto Pinochet, the brutal dictator of Chile. And he was arrested. Well, he was held in a British prison, wasn't he? And then the courts were ruling this, and the courts were ruling that. And then, of course, just like an old mafia don, he got very, very, very sick and went back to Chile, and died there. But the mechanisms, the legal mechanisms, are all in place to get this son of a bitch for what he, Bush, that is, and the rest of these people, what they've done in terms of war crimes and crimes against humanity. And the terrible part is the crimes that Bush and Cheney and Rumsfeld and the rest of them have committed are crimes that were declared to be crimes in a very real sense, by the United States, Great Britain, France, Russia, and who is the other? I guess it was those four: the U.S., Great Britain, France, and Russia. Who am I leaving out? Subsequent to World War II, at the Nuremberg trials, the crimes were very clearly defined, and then the case was made. And people were convicted of committing crimes against humanity, war crimes, and so on and so forth. Dick Cheney and George Bush come along, and they say, "No, we don't. We, you know, screw that. We don't have to do that. What? What are you talking about? Geneva? What? Oh, give me a break. International war crimes? What? Get out of here." Get out of town with this nonsense. You know, what are you talking? You're talking about World War II? You know, get out of here. And that's the attitude. So, could it be done? Certainly it could be done. Will it be done? Probably not. Probably not. Doris is calling from Long Beach, listening, California, listening on KTLK. Hey, Doris.
Hi, Mike.
Hi.
How you doing? Let me turn the radio down. Hold on. Sorry about that.
Oh, that's okay. That's okay.
Anyway, yeah, you're the bright spot in the evening for me.
Well, that's very kind. Thank you.
But I'm sorry to be a dead horse, but I have to vent. I am so incensed about this Reverend thing with Obama. I really am. I'm sorry I voted for the guy. I'm sorry. You know, I didn't have illusions that he was this great progressive.
Right.
But, you know, I've been an organizer for 4 years in Chicago. I've been trained for years as an organizer. And I respected him for that. And I'm a very, very strong feminist. And as far as I'm concerned, he's given me and all feminists a slap in the face. It goes beyond whether you're a gay or lesbian person. Because, yeah, he slapped them in the face. He slapped all of us progressives in the face. All of us who believe in equality. All of us who were against Proposition 8. All of us who understand what, if you're a strong feminist, you understand what symbolism is. And if you're a black person, you should understand what symbolism is and what messages you're sending.
All right, let me ask you this, Doris. I hear you on this loud and clear, by the way. But what about his the appointments he's making to in key positions in his government, including cabinet positions of women? Does that not indicate that to some degree he holds the values of feminism, that women are not to be considered unequal or incapable, and should have the same responsibilities and opportunities as men?
I'm not addressing that issue, though. I'm addressing the issue of what in the world possessed him to make this choice.
Rick Warren, yeah. But
I mean, because
so
look,
you're
I
saying
the church, it's down here in Lake Forest. I used to have a business down there. I know the church very well. This is, you know, as far as I'm concerned, he's Jerry Falwell in Hawaiian shirts.
Well, I agree, and the reason I'm asking you is because I have I'm of the same mindset. He can appoint his entire cabinet to be women, but if he elevates to a very high position someone to give the invocation who is anti-woman, anti-gay, anti-this, anti-that, then that kind of negates it. I just wondered if you felt the same way.
And yes, I do. And you know what? You just were talking about the war crimes.
Right.
Okay, the people who go to his church were the people that thought we did the right thing.
Right.
Who weren't incensed by the fact that we murdered all those Iraqi people.
Right.
They thought it was okay. We're getting a mixed message here, okay?
Mm-hmm.
As far as I'm concerned. As far as I'm concerned, he snubbed, well, I'm going to use a vulgar term. He gave us a finger to all the people who supported him, mm-hmm. all the people who worked so hard to get him elected.
Mm-hmm.
What the devil was he thinking of? This guy even said, I can't vote for Obama. He's pro-choice.
Right, right.
This guy did everything he could to embarrass Obama when he went down to that church.
Mm-hmm.
He set him up.
What
wrong with this guy?
What about the argument that you hear
from Obama and from some of his supporters, that Obama is rising above the garbage and just saying, okay, you know, I know this guy. And a matter of fact, Obama said it. I know this guy disagrees with me. Or he didn't say this guy. He says, I know Reverend Warren disagrees with me, and I disagree with him. But my objective is to reach across here and reach across there and bring people. Do you find that to be kind of naive and stupid? I do.
Yeah, I do.
Yeah.
Because, okay, you can reach across in certain areas, okay?
Right.
I didn't have a problem with Gates, okay? His choice of Gates. Mm. Gates has a mixed history, okay? Since he took over, I hate to use the word because his name, because I vomit every time I mention his name, but Rumsfeld.
Ah, don't! Don't throw up! Don't throw up!
When he took Rumsfeld, I mean, he did show a little bit of a different side to him. And, okay, you want to reach over to the other side of the aisle. Oh, that's okay. Mm. But not in a position like this. The rest of the world is going to be watching us.
Yeah, that's...
And the rest of the world knows more about our politics than most of the people in this country do, unfortunately.
That is definitely the truth, Doris. Listen, I've got to leave it there. Thank you, Doris. I trust me, I hear what you're saying loudly and clearly. I really do. I'm not going to say, and this is no comment on what you said, Doris. This is just me talking. I'm not going to say that I regret my vote for Barack Obama, because I don't. Because I know what my not voting for Barack Obama would have meant to me. It would have meant, just to me, I know other people have entirely different points of view on this, but to me, not voting for Barack Obama would have meant that I was willing to take the risk of having a McCain-Palin administration. And, don't bore yourself or me with all the arguments about how they're the same. I thought I made that clear tonight. I realize the two parties are the same. But anyone who wants to tell me that Barack Obama and Tom DeLay or Barack Obama and any right winger are the same because they happen to be in political parties, I would argue that with you. I would say no. I wouldn't argue with you. I would just say no. I don't agree, and probably walk away, frankly, because I'm sick of arguing. But as far as my vote for Barack Obama, I'm going to stick by it, and that leaves me with a slice of responsibility for what happens, just like the other however many millions. 75 million or whatever it was, people who voted for him. We all have a slice of responsibility for putting him in office. So we'll see what happens. I declared my own little personal moratorium on really trying to get extremely vocal about the things I disagree with Barack Obama. Let's give him a chance. That may be the wrong attitude. We'll certainly find out, won't we?
Washer in the radio, the travel in the engines. And everything will be okay.
Everything will be okay.
Everything will be okay.
Everything will be okay.
In time, 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 in time. In time.
For the hour. All right, for a truck driver from Detroit, there, we gave you like four or five Kevin Kenney and Driving and Crying songs. God, that just flips me back to the early 90s. Boom. 10 before the hour, thanks to the crew tonight and this week. Ian Huff, who engineered and answered your calls tonight. Ben Birch, who is our technical advisor and podcast manager. Sharon Gordy, our military affairs correspondent. Bob Alexander and Bridget Wolf, the Malloy Program's ethical advisors. Bruce Enberg, our economic advisor. Catherine Bay, who is the executive producer of this program. Back to your phone calls. Where are we? There we are. Bob is calling from Dallas, listening on KMNY. Hey, Bob.
Hey, Mike. Thank you very much for your program.
Thanks for listening.
It's a true honor. I mean, you call this guy right early on. You basically said he's an empty suit. You know?
Mm-hmm.
People kind of made believe what they wanted to believe Barack Obama was. I'm a gay man. I was here in Texas, and it became very obvious that Obama was a separate but equal guy when it came to gay rights. And I was kind of laughing because as I was listening, waiting for you to come on, the commercial said, buzz driving is drunk driving. And you know what? Separate but equal is bigotry.
Yeah, really.
You know?
Sure.
Hey, Barack, get it. You know, and guess what? He's a bigot. That's the bottom line. I mean, people who are trying to figure all this stuff out, just look at the way the guy behaves. Mm-hmm. He has never taken a principled stand about anything. He's always looking for what's his political advantage. He was very against the war as long as he wasn't in the Senate. Once he was in the Senate, he was kind of against the war, but he was willing to go along, you know. And ultimately, you know, the whole Democratic Party is, you know, kind of that Neville Chamberlain school of, you know, public policy. You know, reaching across the aisle looks a lot like appeasement.
Yeah, one of the creatures I find worse than a bigot is a hypocrite. And someone who can, I don't know that Barack Obama is a bigot, but he damn sure has displayed himself to be a hypocrite. If he does truly believe in equality of justice, equality under the law, that's all we're talking about here where it concerns gay marriage, is equality under the law. We're not saying anyone has to like anything or promote anything or celebrate anything. It's simply equality under the law. And if Barack Obama, given his background, his aspirations, and his accomplishments, if he doesn't subscribe to that idea completely, then he is a hypocrite. He's an absolute hypocrite. To me, hypocrisy is worse than bigotry. You know, bigotry is not fatal. Bigotry can be, you know, light can shine on bigotry. Air can get to it, and all of a sudden, it can change.
Mike, one more point, and that is that in no southern state were miscegenation laws or interracial marriage laws overturned in the ballot box. Not one.
That's right.
They are still on the books today. They simply cannot be enforced.
That last part there, I think the last state that had these laws in the books was Virginia, and that was declared unconstitutional. Once the Supreme...
Right. I read a couple of years ago, because I was active in gay politics back mm-hmm. in the 80s,
mm-hmm.
and I remember reading that back in those days they said that no state legislature had ever gone through and reversed the laws.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Okay, the laws may still be on the books, but they've been declared unconstitutional.
Exactly, by the same right. court that made abortion legal.
Right.
I would like to point that out to
right.
those people who are so into their family values.
That's very true. The Warren Court, wasn't it?
Yes.
Yeah, it was the Warren Court. So here we are. Well, I certainly understand what you're saying. Thanks, Bob.
Thank you.
All right, man. Appreciate you checking in. Take care. Dick is calling from Seattle, listening on KPTK. Hey, Dick.
Yeah, Mike. You know, I wanted to speak to something that's historic and we don't get right. We don't know our history because we always seem to accept the corporate right-of-center media's spin.
Uh-huh.
And that's why we have little idea of what Watergate was about. Now, Deep Throat, Mark Felt, died today. And by the way, he was nicknamed by Robert Redford in the screenplay writer of All the President's Men, Deep Throat.
Mm-hmm.
And we tend to overlook the fact that he was a J. Edgar Hoover protege. Bob Woodward had to have had another inside accomplice who was probably Al Haig. But, you know, to know Watergate, you need to know the leader, James McCord, who was head of Nixon's security, and formerly he headed up CIA's internal security. He was a right-wing fundamentalist with a grudge against Nixon for Nixon's threats against the CIA. Now, this is the guy who took Nixon down, and Woodward wasn't a journalist. Carl Bernstein said that they thought English was his second language. He was an ONI operative hired by Washington Post senior editor Ben Bradley, who himself was a former CIA agent back in 47. So if you want to learn the strange truth here, I only know of three accurate books on this, and they're very interesting. And I can name just three. Secret Agenda, Silent Coup, and Carl Oglesby's Yankee Cowboy War, which even ties in the Kennedy assassination, which is notable in Nixon's threat to the CIA over Watergate, which is called the Bay of Pigs thing.
Yeah, I've always had a certain amount of suspicion about Bob Woodward because of his work with Naval Intelligence, because of his access. So I get what you're saying. Dick, we're out of time, man. I am sorry, but we have got to go. I'll see you Monday. Take care, y'all. Have a good weekend. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M. Have a great weekend, Kevin Kinney, wherever you are.